Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back. Another episode of All Things Related to Your Health with yours truly, Deborah Spears, your holistic health coach. And this week I have a very special guest with me. It is the podcast doctor. His name is Phil, and he's a doctor, but it's not the Dr. Phil that you're thinking of. He's the podcast doctor. And I want to welcome the podcast doctor to this episode. Say hello to everyone.
Hi, everybody. How's it going? Thank you, Deborah, for having me on.
Yeah, this is great. I love having to talk to new people. And we're all about health and weight loss. And I know you have a wonderful story. And I think stories help to motivate people when they see that someone else has done it. You talk a lot to people, and I talk a lot to people who struggle and they give up and they lose a little bit and then they go back because they don't see any hope. But I think it's a wonderful thing when you can hear someone else share a success story. So I'm going to give Phil the opportunity to share his story with you guys today.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate you having me on. And you know what's crazy is that, you know, my entire life I've been a large fellow. I've been a big guy. You know, right now I'm 6'3". And I used to be about 356 pounds. Right. And, you know, 32 years old, and my whole entire life, I just was a big guy. I never really thought about my weight or never really had, I had issues, but I never really was concerned about it. I just was like, oh, well, I'm just a big guy. So, but when I was younger, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes at the age of 14. So I had adult onset diabetes when I was a teenager. And, you know, you would think that would kind of shock you into changing a little bit of your ways because, you know, with type 2 diabetes, it can actually be reversed. But, you know, my parents didn't really have a lot of knowledge on it. And so we really didn't change much. Maybe the first couple of months we started to change a little bit of the diet. But when it's something like that and it's your child, you kind of have to, the whole family has to change their diet. Yes. And they didn't do that. You know, so I, you know, would fall back into my ways. I'd be eating, you know, a giant mixing bowl of cereal for breakfast. And so, you know, I'd be still drinking a whole bunch of sodas and all that stuff. And you know, I didn't really care because I didn't really feel any different. You know, I felt like me. I felt fine. You know, so I'm like, okay, well, this is something I'll worry about when I'm older. And so, everything was fine, but my A1C was extremely high, you know, and it was running at 10s, 11s, 12s at the time. And then I ended up moving down to Florida back in 2006. And so I was on my own, you know, and I still didn't really have the knowledge, or it's not that I didn't care. It's just I didn't have any symptoms, right? I didn't feel anything different. Yeah. So I just kind of ignored it. You know, I stopped completely taking my medicine. I was on, what was it at the time? Was it glucophage at the time? Mm-hmm. Which is now, metformin now?
Yes.
And so I completely just stopped taking my medicine at the time. And I still didn't feel any different. You know, I had to use the bathroom a lot. That was probably the only symptom that I could think that I had issues with, was just me having to go use the bathroom.
Right. And so, Phil, how old were you about then?
Early 20s, 21, okay. 22.
Okay.
Yeah, 21, 22. And then, you know, I would, because I would still be the same person that I was. I'm still very active. You know, I did a lot of stuff, played sports, you know, still did all that stuff. But, you know, after we would do that, I would just, you know, eat a whole bunch of sweets and eat a whole bunch of bread and, you know, do everything else that everybody else did because I wanted to fit in.
And were you having your blood drawn annually then?
No, I just completely ignored it.
So you weren't going to the doctor. Okay.
No, wasn't going to the doctor, wasn't getting my A1C checked, wasn't checking my blood sugar or anything. Didn't even take the medication. So people didn't even know that I was diabetic.
And what was the moment? What happened that made you make the decision to turn this around?
Well, I mean, not for another 10 years, honestly.
Wow. Okay, well, back up. I'm sorry, then back up. Give me some of that 10-year period of you mean you went 10 years with the only symptom was frequent urination and you just continued.
Oh, no. These next 10 years have been a huge change in me and a big growth period in my mental state as well, because what I didn't realize is that I was depressed. Because I knew what was going on with me, and I started to get more symptoms. I started to get spots on my body. I started to get sicker a lot. I had a son at 24. So you would think that, oh, maybe he would change his ways because he's got a child now. No, that didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I thought about it, didn't change my ways. I started to take my medicine a little bit, but I wasn't taking it seriously still.
Yeah.
And,
the diet
was getting worse, honestly,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, now we have to take care of another being,
yeah.
You know, so,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, we put ourselves in the back burner when we have a child.
Stress.
So,
yes, absolutely.
And so I was eating still terribly. And then, eventually I was 29 at the time. My A1C was at a 14, Deborah.
Wow.
So, that's, you know, averaging around 400. And so I had a little callus on my foot, right? Ignored it. Then my foot started swelling up. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should go to the doctor. And so I went to the doctor and they checked the foot. They cut the callus off of my foot and they saw that there was nothing under there. So if I was infected.
Yeah.
So the infection ate all the way down to the bone. So you could see the bone if you looked at my foot.
And at 29?
29, yeah. And so they're like, you need to go to the hospital right now. So I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So I went to the hospital and they were pretty much telling me that we have to amputate part of your foot because the infection has gotten so bad. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm like, okay. You would think then I would change my ways,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I still didn't. So this was 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Were you having a healthcare provider at all? Because let me just back up and tell everybody, healthy A1C, Phil just said his was 14. It should really be below 7. So that's a big number. So you were seeing anybody?
I did have a doctor, but I just kind of shrugged off what they would say because they would tell me, oh, they were like, oh, you're going to die. You know, you need to do this. So I had the medicine. I just didn't take it like I should or I didn't eat the correct things. And so I was just kind of ignoring everything, you know?
Okay. So, Phil, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm hoping that we'll have other people listening that we can help with this. And so I want to pull in mental health in a positive way. So when you see the doctor, it's a physical being piece of you that you're seeing the doctor for. And what I try to get people to understand, not for listeners, if you have a physical ailment, you see a physical doctor, our mind and our body and our spirit and our soul, it's all connected. So there was a psychology that was, you weren't putting yourself as a priority, and there were other things going on unrelated to the physical, but it was impacting the physical. So sometimes the doctors, what they don't do, because they focus in on their area of expertise, which is, you know, telling you to get your A1C down and telling you what to eat and what medicine, but making the connection that I've heard you say this, I've said, I'm the doctor, I've said this to you and there's no results. I'm the patient, I've heard you say this and there are no results. Let's try to see whether there's someone else that we should talk to get to the root of why at that moment your priority wasn't you. Because we can't take care of, when we say our priority is our kids, I mean, I get it, but the truth is we can't take care of them if we don't take care of us, because I'm say, for example, I'm a nurse. I don't work in clinical practice anymore. I'm retired from that. But when I was, I couldn't go into work and take care of my patients if I had the flu. I couldn't take care of anybody else unless I take care of me. So I'd have to stay home and take care of me. So at some point, there's a psychology associated with letting things go and not. And I talk to people that are struggling with weight and have struggled with it for years, and the conversation is always about what to eat, what not to eat, where to find your food, and that kind of thing. When really, if it's that you're stressed, so you're eating a bowl of ice cream at 2 a.m., or the job is requiring you to do something major, and you're not sure you're going to get it done, so you stay up all night working on that project, and you have Doritos with you to keep you awake. So those are stress things, and I just like people to make that connection that if somebody had said, you know, if we could just write a prescription to say, just go in and talk to this mental health evaluation, just for evaluation. You know how we get an annual physical evaluation? Let's get a mental health evaluation, not saying that, you know, there's anything wrong that's really can't be reversed, just like you can reverse type 2 diabetes, which so many people don't know, especially if you're at the early stages of before it's blown up. But I just wanted to throw that in to say to everyone else that I know and anybody that I may not know that's listening that is struggling with it and have been struggling with it for a long time, but you haven't sort of dug deep to see whether there's a psychological reason why you're not a priority.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is that that still didn't change anything in me. Having part of my foot amputated still didn't change anything to me, because I would always just put it off and like, oh yeah, I can change tomorrow. I can change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And my diabetes actually got worse, you know? And I was having more intestinal problems. I was, you know, it just, everything just got bad, and I bloated up to about 357 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I was recently in the hospital back in May. Mm-hmm. And I had my appendix taken out.
Okay.
And so I got out of the hospital, and then I'm, you know, waddling, on my clothes fitting tight. I'm wearing 5X shirts, you know, and it's insane. And then this guy at work, just literally, he's like in his 60s. And I saw he was losing some weight, and I just asked him, I was like, John, what are you doing? And he just said he started to change his diet, and he just started simple, mm-hmm. started to change his diet. And then he just started to, he went to see a doctor, a weight loss doctor, to mm-hmm. try to help him get on track. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. those are all phony. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, just go. Yeah. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go. And so I went and talked to them, and I just got some basic information, because it's not like the program is like they don't hold you down and force you to eat this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, so the education is the biggest thing. And so what I was realizing, you know, to take Titus back into what you were saying about mental health, is that I was so depressed with myself. I was letting myself die.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that it was an issue. You know, I focused on everything else, you know, my jobs and my family, and I never focused on myself. And I realized that food was an addiction to me.
Yes.
And food was being an addiction, and food was a comfort for me, because I didn't have that comfort anywhere else.
Yes.
And so what I was doing was throwing my life away and just kind of saying, oh, well, if I die, I die, you know? And so, you know, and that was really, really tough for me to realize as a young person, you know, because I was killing myself, you know, and, you know, my blood pressure was in the 200s and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. And so when I was younger, I used to feel that, you know, when I would hear that somebody would, you know, OD on drugs or whatever, I wouldn't feel sorry for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I would hear that, I'd be eating chips or donuts or something at the time, you know, and not realize that the food was my drug.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
And so, I did the weight loss clinic stuff. I changed my diet just to see. I started changing stuff just a little bit, mm-hmm. and I lost 10 pounds the first week. And I was like, what? And then the second week I lost another 10 pounds. I'm like, no, this is just water weight or whatever. Just me trying to shrug it off. But the thing is that I felt better.
Yes.
You know, I started feeling better. I'm like,
yes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yes.
And I just started with the program. I just kept doing it.
Yes.
And in about 4 months, I lost about 55 pounds. So my A1C dropped from the last time I had it checked before the most recent time, it was at a 8.
Okay.
And so the last time I had it checked again, the last time was in the end of October. It was 5.3.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where you want to stay. 5 and 6 and
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So the piece about being depressed, and I want to linger on it a little bit, but not too much, only because the food is like, it relieves that. If whatever it is that you're bothering, it's just like all the other drugs. The only difference is we can't just cold turkey and stop eating. We just have to change how we eat because you need food to live. But it's particularly sugar is so addictive. It's like we get some of it and we crave more of it. And you can't, there's no way to remove it completely from your diet because it's in everything. So being able to juggle and adjust in that lifestyle into eating a balanced amount of those things, those carbohydrates and things, is very difficult. It's even harder than somebody that's trying to come off of a drug or an alcohol, only because once you come off of that, you're just, the plan is to don't touch it at all. You're not going to go to a bar if you're no longer drinking, but you have to go in the kitchen every day, whether you are withdrawing from food or not. It's very, very difficult. And it's like you have to have the whole family involved. If you don't have everybody in the house involved, it won't work. I heard you say early on about, you know, when you were a kid, it was you and everybody else in the family was eating, you know, different or whatever they wanted to. If it's not everyone, it won't work because it's what's in the refrigerator more than what's in the supermarket. So when you go to the supermarket, if you're very careful, and you avoid the things that you shouldn't have in moderation, and you fill up on your cart on the healthy things. But when you get home, somebody else in the house does not have those restrictions. It's in the refrigerator. So if you wake up at 2 a.m. and you're just like, I just got to have something. If there's nothing in the kitchen but apples, you're going to have an apple. But if there's cookies and cream in the refrigerator, ice cream or whatever, you're going to go for that. So it's very important to pull the whole family in, and it's very important to understand that it's an addiction when you eat foods that have a lot of sugar and salt in it, and it's not something that you can just say, I'm never going to do it again. It's something that you have to constantly be paying attention to this until taste buds change, as particularly if you're eating sweets, the more concentrated the sweets are, the more you want. And so once you start using less sugar in things and eating things that have less added sugar, your taste buds are going to change over time, and you're going to be able to taste the sugar as if it was at the same concentration when it was higher. I hope that makes sense to everybody that's listening.
It makes sense to me because, you know, I just – out of the blue, I've tasted some things. Sometimes I order something, you know, and, you know, they give me a tea or something, or my wife gets a tea or something, I taste it. Oh, my goodness, I can taste the sugar. It literally tastes like hard rocks.
Yes.
Almost.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, I mean, that is so absolutely true. And I'd like to tell people the story about sugar, cane sugar anyway, because cane sugar grows in these big, hard stalks, like, I don't know how you, I wish I had a picture of one. It's like a tree branch that's tough as a rock. And in order for you to get the sweet out of it, you have to chew on it for a very long time, and you get very little amount of sweet. That's how Mother Nature intended for us to get that sugar. But we figured out a way to put it in a machine and squeeze it out and make it into teaspoons, where we get a large concentration of it in just 1 or 2 teaspoons. So if we were to only get our sugar from chewing on a cane, we would never get this much sugar in our diet. They pack it in everything after that. You'd be surprised how many things that are not considered sweets that actually have sugar in it, like frozen dinners, like processed meat, things like that. I generally tell people to avoid anyway, because on top of the sugar and the diabetes,
salt.
The salt, and just the connection between all these preventable illnesses, like later in life, colon cancer and all that, it's so directly linked to that people don't want to talk about. But if you go back and you look at the research from many, 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 many decades ago, they will show that connection. But because the business of food is so large that they limit how much information they give to people about those kind of things and the long-term effect of them, because it would hurt their bottom line, their pocket. If something has a half a gram of sugar in it, you can actually say that it's sugar-free. But the person might eat four, the person, exactly, four, it has to be more than a half a gram. So the person might eat four times that serving. So they actually did get 2 grams of sugar when they thought they were getting no sugar. To make you want to come back for a little bit more and a little bit more.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we knew that telling people fat-free, buying fat-free foods was going to make everybody fat. When it came out, because every fat-free food is loaded with sugar, and it's the sugar that's making you fat. But the food industry has such a large vote, but the consumers are the ones that pay, because we do all these things that cause us to be sick, and then we have to spend all this time and money in hospitals and healthcare getting treatment for the things that cause us sick to be sick that we could have prevented if we knew how much sugar is in that. That package has 10 servings in it, and I eat half the package at a time, then I'm getting more sugar and salt than I think I am, because it's the percentage is average. So they'll increase the number of servings in a package such that they can record it that way. But the most consumers, have you ever just eaten a tenth of a bag of microwave popcorn?
But if you read
the fine print on the bag, it'll tell you that there are 10 servings in it. Enough in there to serve 10 people. What 10 people? Maybe not every brand, but if you pick one of the popular brands that I'm not going to name, and you read it's written very small. That's just one example. That's just one example, but they want them to stay on the shelf a long time. They want you to buy them and consume them. And then down the road, people are struggling with these things that they could have prevented if they knew to buy the version that you have to do work to prepare is actually better for you, to actually take the time and cook it yourself. But continue, because I know we're up to 23 and you're like 30 now, so right.
Well, my story is pretty much where I'm at right now. You know, my A1C is at a 5.3. You know, I'm about 299.
Okay.
So I've lost about 55 pounds. I'm still, you know, I try and tell people, I try and keep it real when I do talk to people that I still struggle with it. You know, it's not like my whole entire life has just completely changed. You know, I still have my issues. I still have my cravings, and I still do fail sometimes. And I try and tell them, it's like, you know, it's okay. It's just as long as I'm aware of what is going on.
That's
great. And so I can get back on track and change my ways again. You know, the holidays is definitely a difficult time.
Is a difficult time for everyone. And what I always tell people on the holidays, if you go to any holiday gathering or anything like that, I always eat before I go. So I'm not really hungry when I'm there. That means I'll just be able to nibble on something that's really not good. And just the nibble is not going to hurt you. It's the big serving.
True.
Serving is the problem. So, and the holidays are hard for everyone, because we associate food with so many things that I tell people, if the kitchen is your favorite room in the house, you might want to consider finding another favorite room in the house.
That's funny. Yeah. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
And And so I realize everything now, and so I'm still in the process of it. I've started to do a lot of cardio and walk on the treadmill and get a stationary bike, and so I'm in the process of changing my life completely. But I do want to tell people that it isn't the big things in your life that change your perception. It's like I said, it wasn't me getting my foot amputated. It wasn't the birth of my son. It wasn't me getting my appendix out. It wasn't any of that. It was just a guy at work, just told me just to try this out, and that's what changed. And so I try and tell people that sometimes it's not the big traumas in your life that get you to change. So don't let something like a big trauma be what you think is a catalyst for your change. Just try something.
Wonderful. I am so, I just have to commend you. That's this amazing story that you've actually turned this around, and actually now you can be a voice for other people. That one conversation that you had with the guy, you have that one conversation with someone, and that one someone has that conversation with someone else. It's far bigger than you think it is. What you've done is so much bigger than what you think. And it's going to continue to grow into helping so many other people. I did want you to share about you and what you're doing, because I want people to know that you're not just the weight loss guy, you are also the podcast doctor. So tell us a little bit about that before we close.
Okay, yeah. So I am known as the podcast doctor. This is one of my many full-time jobs. I come from terrestrial radio, so I did just recently leave ESPN radio here in Orlando, but I've been doing this for over 10 years. And the podcast industry has grown tremendously, exponentially in the past 6 years. And now mostly a lot of people have their own podcast. And why I'm here to help people is because I believe that podcasting is better than terrestrial radio, because everybody can have a voice and everybody can reach everyone in the world in literally an instant. But with that said, a lot of people do need a lot of help with it. You don't just pick up a microphone and get famous. It takes a lot of hard work, it takes a lot of dedication, and it takes a lot of sacrifice. And so that's where I come in. I offer coaching, I offer editing, I offer distribution, and even for the people locally, I even will come to you and record your show for you. And so coming from terrestrial radio, I also help people who own a business as well, because I know how much they would spend in radio advertising, and I know that the radio advertisements don't work as well. And so being in podcasting, now they can cater to their own specific audience and reach their people how they want to reach it. And so that's how I feel that I'm here. I can help, and I think that I have a lot of knowledge that I'd like to share with everybody. And I'm helping the community one person at a time, and people like what I do, and I love what I do. This is very rewarding to me, and I will continue to do this as long as podcasts are popular.
Absolutely. Now tell people where they can find you, how they can reach
Okay.
you.
All right. So my website is itsthepodcastdoctor.com. So it's literally itsthepodcastdoctor.com, all spelled out. Or you can find me on social media on Facebook. It's at It's the Podcast Doctor. Or if they do have any podcast questions, is it okay if I give them my phone number, Deborah?
Absolutely. If it's okay with you.
Okay, well, I have a business line, so
Okay.
so if you are interested in starting a podcast, or if you have a podcast and you kind of think you need a little bit of help, you can call me at 352-717-4071.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And he is the pro. Absolutely. I can tell you from experience that this guy is the real deal. The podcast doctor, Phil Bird. And thank you so much for joining us today. I so really appreciate it. We're going to have you come back after you've lost a few more and share the continued progress and growth so that other people can learn from you. Thanks so much, Phil.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, everyone, once again, thanks so much for joining me. Yours truly, Deborah Spears, your holistic health coach. I am always happy to share stories. that would help inspire others to achieve your weight loss goals and getting healthier. It was such a pleasure. This is the holidays. I wish everyone a very happy, happy holiday and a happy, happy new year. Until next time, be blessed.